I think not being satisfied with some success. I think the thing, I came in as a number one pick, third pick overall, and my attitude was, I need to work harder than anybody. I have to earn not only a roster spot, but I want to earn the starting job. And that's the approach I took every year for 13 years.
Welcome to the next episode of What's Next with Eric Wood. Our next guest is considered to be one of, if not the greatest lineman to ever play the game of football. He was enshrined into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 1998 and was the first ever Cincinnati Bengals player to do so, and that's Anthony Munoz. Anthony was a left tackle for the Bengals for 13 seasons from 1980 to 1992, earning 11 Pro Bowls, 9 first-team All-Pro awards, and he also won the Walter Payton Man of the Year award in 1991. Today on the show, Anthony and I talk some ball. Specifically, we get into his transition in and out of the NFL, how he maintained such a high level of play throughout his career, and his thoughts on the current Cincinnati Bengals. Also, you'll hear some valuable lessons on this episode from Anthony about parenting kids in sports and modeling hard work and discipline in your life. It's an honor to have someone like Anthony on the show. After sitting down with him, I can absolutely see how his work ethic and drive led him to a Hall of Fame career. I looked up to him so much as a kid growing up in Cincinnati and still look up to the man he is today. We recently received a review from SB Champs 2020. I'm assuming that's Super Bowl Champs, and I'm assuming they're referring to the Bills. And he said, "So happy I've stumbled upon this podcast. From Sean McDermott to Kim Pegula to Jerry Butler, it is so great to listen in on these conversations with such successful people. Keep it up, E. Wood. Go Bills." Thank you so much for that review. And finally, remember to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. It really does go a long way in helping us produce great content for you. Now, enjoy the show. This episode has been brought to you by Jordan Yoakum at Tom James Company. Jordan is my clothing guy, and I get everything from him, from custom suits and dress clothes to casual wear. Let Jordan do the shopping for you to save you precious time that could be focused on your family, career, or hobbies. Jordan can work virtually with anyone in the world, and if he cannot personally get your measurements himself, he will have someone come get them for him. If you have put on the quarantine 15 like many have and your clothes aren't fitting properly anymore, he can also make adjustments to the clothing you already have. There's a certain confidence that comes with having clothes that fit perfect, and let Jordan give you that confidence. You can contact him by email at jordan.yoakum@tomjames.com or visit his website louisvillecustomclothing.com. Contact info will be in the show notes.
Anthony, thank you so much for your time today.
Eric, no problem. Looking forward to chatting a little bit here.
Yeah, for a kid who grew up playing football on the west side of Cincinnati, there was no one better to look up to in the city of Cincinnati. We're so glad you stuck around. So it's truly an honor to be able to spend a few minutes with you today.
Well, I appreciate it. You know, coming when I first got drafted by the Bengals and got back here to Cincinnati, I'd heard all about the, you know, Cincinnati football. And I said, I got to check this out. And I tell you what, it only took me a couple of games to go on Friday night and say, high school football is serious here. So it's great to be with you, and I'm glad that we stuck around in this great community.
Well, that says a lot coming from California, because California's got excellent high school football too, and I'll use that as a way to transition. Why don't you tell the listeners about where you grew up and what sports you played growing up?
You're right. You know, a lot of athletes came out of, you know, we're Southern California, of course, the whole state of California, pretty loaded. But I grew up about 40 miles east of Los Angeles in a small community, Ontario, California. And, you know, my mom raised five of us by herself. I mean, she was mom, dad, coach, and, of course, all five of us knew she was the boss. So, you know, I got started with sports at an early age. I have two older brothers and two younger sisters. I'm right in the middle of five. And both my brothers were playing baseball. So at the age of 6, 7 years old, that was my dream. I was going to be a Major League Baseball player, and I started hanging out with them and playing baseball. So about 7 years old, I started playing baseball at a competitive level, and I realized that, you know, even at that young, that I had, you know, God had blessed me with some baseball skills. So that was something I started playing. And really the other sports were there, but baseball was it. We played a lot of sandlot football. I mean, we would go out in the street, you know, and play on the street. Yeah. Or we had a little field on the side of our house. And Eric, the crazy thing about it, as a baseball player, I was a big kid. I was a third baseman pitcher. Now, the strength was not my running speed. The strength was my arm. Mainly, I'd say number one, my arm, and then my back. So I had an unbelievable arm. So in Sandlot football, I played quarterback.
Nice.
And I was the biggest kid, but I let all the kids with the speed go out. And, so I played baseball. And then at the age of 8, I started playing flag football. So from 8 years old to 8th grade, I was a product of flag football, and all I played was quarterback. I mean, I was going to be a quarterback. I went on beyond, flag football, I was going to play quarterback. So I played football. Baseball was my first love, and I played a little bit of basketball. So when I got into high school, I played all three sports. I played football, basketball, and baseball. Tried to play quarterback my freshman year, but the coach didn't want anything to do with that. He said, "You're not a quarterback. You're a lineman." I said, "No, but I've been a quarterback since 8 years old." He goes, "No." He said, "You got to go to the equipment manager and change that face mask. You need an offensive line face mask." I said, "You're nuts." First day, I was a little depressed. But the second day, I was like one of the probably the 4 or 5 biggest kids on campus as a freshman. And that second day, I'm thinking, man, this is fun. You get to, throw kids around and it's legal. So I guess he knew what I was, what he was doing. But the crazy thing, even though I started playing football as a freshman, I didn't play varsity until my junior year. And even though I was 6'4", 250 as a sophomore, I still played sophomore. So then I played varsity my last 2 years, but I was all state 3 years in baseball as a third baseman Wow. pitcher. So even, and I played varsity basketball for 2 years in high school. So, growing up in Southern California, you could play baseball year round and just about any sport you wanted to. So athletics was a big part of my growing up.
That's phenomenal. I'm glad you bragged on Cincinnati football earlier, because I didn't play varsity. I didn't start on varsity until my senior year of high school. So I appreciate you building up Cincinnati football. It doesn't make me look quite as bad anymore. Was it an easy transition for you, or an easy decision for you to stay home and go to USC?
It was, yeah. So growing up as a kid, 40 miles from campus, I mean, I used to watch all the games. And I mean, I don't know what I was more impressed with was the football program or that big white horse that ran around the track every time they scored. But, yeah, it was one thing. Even though I wanted to play baseball, I thought if there's any way to go to USC to play football or baseball, man, and they offered me, I'm there. So, yeah, at a young age, probably freshman, sophomore in high school, I wanted to go there. And, of course, I could see that maybe football was going to be my ticket, even though I played baseball. Yeah, so once the recruiting process started and they offered me, I didn't take any trips across the country, because I pretty much handled the whole recruiting process myself, because my mom wasn't aware of what was going on. So I had to do everything. So I knew I was going to stay in Southern California. And before my recruiting started, guys could take unlimited trips. You could go every week and take however many trips you wanted to take. Of course, my senior year, they said, okay, you can only take 5 trips. But even at that young age and not being really up to what was going on, I felt if I took a trip to Ohio State and I knew I wasn't going there, that might eliminate a trip for somebody else that really wanted to go there, or to Notre Dame, or to, LSU. So I just said, I'm just taking this one trip. But I ended up taking 2 trips because it was right there in our backyard, and mainly because a lot of my buddies were going to take the trip. So I knew I was pretty much locked into SC, but I took a trip to UCLA just to be with my buddies for that weekend. But yeah, I knew once they offered me, even with the coaching change, John McKay was the coach. He started to recruit me. And then he left going into my senior year. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers started their franchise and he took the head coaching job. So there was a little bit of a dead period there before they hired a new head coach. So you better believe UCLA stepped it up. But once the USC hired their new coach, John Robinson, the recruiting process started. So, I mean, I knew I was going to stay in Southern California. And once they got their new coach, I was signed, sealed, and delivered to USC.
What unbelievable maturity at 17, 18 years old to understand that you could be taking away someone else's college dream away from them if you took a visit somewhere else. I'm blown away by that type of maturity. I'm not sure I had that at the time. Now,
I don't know if it was maturity. I'm still looking for that maturity. My wife's still looking for it. But I have to share this. I have to share one regret that I had now, that I know about the whole recruiting process. So, I was pretty much set on USC. It wasn't official again until you signed. There was no commitment. It was just when signing day you signed. But my senior year, USC lost to UCLA, so they went to another bowl. UCLA was going to the Rose Bowl, and they were playing Ohio State. Well, about a week before Ohio State came out to California for the Rose Bowl, I remember the guy's name, Coach George Mummy of Woody Hayes' staff, Ohio State, called me. And he says, Anthony, you know we're coming out to play UCLA in the Rose Bowl. I am calling on behalf of Coach Hayes. He wants to have lunch with you and tell you about Ohio State. And I said, Coach, I'm flattered and I appreciate it. And again, this was at 16, 17 years old. I said, I'm pretty much staying here. So, you know, I prefer not to talk to anybody else. And I wish I would have just had lunch with Woody Hayes. I mean, here you got this icon head coach, and just to have lunch and met him. I never met him. I've played with guys that played with him. I've heard, of course, living in Ohio all these years. But I wish I would have just taken the time just to have lunch with him and just to meet the guy. But that's really the only regret I had during recruiting. But I was totally happy committing and going to USC.
Yeah, that's a really cool story. You get to USC and you play baseball and football, which you mentioned. I believe you missed your freshman year in baseball due to some rehab, maybe, but then you got to play in the College World Series. How tough was it? Eventually, you're going to have to choose one, unless you're going to go the Deion Sanders route eventually, which would be tough for an offensive lineman at the size you got to keep. But how tough of a decision was it to give up baseball eventually?
Yeah, first of all, as a pitcher, that right arm, you know, you got to use it in pass pro, you know, and if you can't be stopping 300-pound guys and expect to throw a fastball or curveball. But you know what? Once I got to USC, I think the way things pretty much dictated and made the decision for me, because what a lot of people don't realize, the 4 years at USC, I had three knee operations. Wow. So the agreement was in the recruiting process, and it wasn't just a sales pitch, because USC had a track record of letting their guys play baseball if they're good enough. So that was the whole thing. You come here on a football scholarship, you play baseball, but the rule was your freshman year, you have to go through football spring training, and then you can play the rest of the time. But my freshman year, I got hurt 7 games in the season. I had a knee operation. So that second year, my sophomore year, I was healthy through football, so I got to play baseball, even though – because I went through spring my freshman year after rehabbing. But then the next 2 years pretty much dictated what sport was – and, of course, my development in football. I went through two knee operations, one my junior and one my senior. So that's why I couldn't play baseball. Plus, I didn't play a whole lot of football. You know, people don't realize that, you know, people see the pro career and think that there was a decorated college career, but I only played one healthy season in football, and that was the year I played baseball. And as you mentioned, won and out, and I got to experience the World Series and get a national championship in baseball. And then that next year in football, which was the same calendar year, my junior year, which I did get hurt, but I played 7 games, we won a football national championship. So I got to start 7 games on a national championship football team and block 7 games for a Heisman Trophy winner. So 1978 was a pretty good year.
That is a good year. In your humility showing through talking about your college career, you end up being the number 3 overall pick in the NFL draft. What was the transition like going to Cincinnati? I know you love it now. You still make a home in Mason, Ohio, just outside of Cincinnati. So you obviously loved it. But how tough was it spending your whole life in Southern California and then ending up in Cincinnati?
Well, I think for me, it was an easier transition, I think, because of my situation. So I got married my sophomore year in college. So my last 2.5 years, my wife and I were married. Both families were right there in Southern California. We get drafted, come to Cincinnati. We have to pull out a map to see where Cincinnati is. Not strong in geography back then. But you know, the interesting thing is the first 2 years, we actually went back to California in the offseason. We bought a house in Southern California with the, you know, we'll play and then go back. But then we started a family. We had our son my second year. And then my third year, we were going to go back to Southern California. We still had our house, but my wife was pregnant. We were having our second kid. So we actually never went back to Southern California. We sold our house over the phone, made the move. And at first, you know, it was a little tough, but, you know, we were embraced, fell in love with the environment. I mean, in Southern California, you don't have a whole lot of room for elbow space and to move around. I mean, you can't beat the weather. But we got back here. We sold our house in Southern California, bought a house here. We built it. We're thinking, oh, my goodness. We're building twice the house for the price in California. We have, you know, 10 times as much property. We have a chance to kind of spread out. So it didn't take us long to really fall in love with Cincinnati. And, you know, even after I retired, after 13 years of playing, less than a week before, you know, the past after my retirement, I got a job offer back in L.A. at USC. And, you know, with the kid that was 9 and one that was 11, Didi and I both decided, I decided we're going to turn down the job because I wanted to stay. We wanted to stay in Cincinnati. We fell in love with it. So at first it was a little tough. People say, well, how did you handle the winter? For me, that was the most fun part of it, you know, was the winter. I enjoy the cold. I still enjoy the winter. The one thing that people say you'll get used to, we've been here, 40 years. I'm not used to humidity yet.
Right.
Like, I'd like it to cool off at night when it's hot and humid in the day, but it just doesn't do that. So it didn't take long for us to really fall in love with the people, with the community. And I think the transition was pretty easy.
Oh, that's phenomenal to hear, being from Cincinnati. And I know all the listeners from Cincinnati will love the adoration you have for the city. And you mentioned you played 13 seasons in the NFL. What advice would you have for guys that are young in their NFL careers to continue playing at a high level for a long period of time? And I think this type of advice and this type of knowledge applies to people in all different walks of life.
It does. I guess, and I say, you know, I talk a lot about it. You know, being the number 3 pick, being expected to come in and start right away, those were my goals. Because of the lack of playing time in college, I wanted to come out and make sure that the Bengals made the right decision. So, you know, I earned the starting left tackle job 2 days into camp, started 13 years. I think not being satisfied with some success. I think the thing – I came in as the number 1 pick, 3rd pick overall, and my attitude was – I need to work harder than anybody. I have to earn not only a roster spot, but I want to earn the starting job. And that's the approach I took every year for 13 years. My offseason workout, I believe the volume turned up every year that I spent in the NFL. Of course, you know, as a young guy, you got to come in, you got to prove yourself. You know, here's this young guy, this high run, you know, then the older you get close to 30. Now you're considered an old guy and you have these young guys. So then you have to step it up even more, your technique, your conditioning. So I would say to young guys that don't be satisfied with making the team. Don't ever be satisfied with any success. Continue to work even harder. You know, for me, I didn't stop training right after the season. I might take a day off, and I understand things change, but I might take a day off after my last game. And because I trained so hard during the season, not only in the weight room, but I ran a lot during the season too. And I ran a lot, you know, after the season. I would take a day and then I would get right back into it because I didn't want my conditioning to be up here and then to take a month off and for it to drop. I wanted to stay right there. So I would tell young guys, you know, don't be satisfied. If you have a good game, look for the things that you made mistakes because we all do and learn from those mistakes. Build on the successes, but learn from the mistakes and work even harder in those areas. And that's the approach I took. You know, we would take a week or two vacation. And I was going to spend time with the kids, but the first thing I would look for when we'd get into that vacation spot, I would look for a weight facility to train and a spot to run. Because that only takes, you know, a couple hours a day, and then you can spend the rest of the day with your family. But that was my job, even though it was in the off season. So I would tell guys, you know, just – and I had probably one of the nicest compliments. I was playing a golf tournament in Florida, and the Ponce brothers, you know, the two guys that – they came up, they were in a cart together, and I saw them, and I wanted to go over and meet them. So they popped up right away, and they came over, and they said, hey, Mr. Munoz, you know, all you young guys, I prefer Anthony, but a lot of times it's Mr. Munoz. They said, we just want to thank you, and we appreciate it. We listened to a speech, and we heard that you talked about your conditioning, that you didn't take a whole lot of time, and it was a year-round thing because you wanted to play as long as possible, and you felt that was a – they said they both adapted that philosophy. And they say, we train year round and we, you know, we believe that's going to help us out. So, you know, for young guys that say that, you know, an old guy like myself had an influence on how they train. And, you know, you growing up here, I don't know if you ever went down to Spinney Field, you know, where we trained, but that was not a top facility. But we had a group of guys all off season going down there and training, lifting weights and running. And that was just what we did. So that's the advice I would give to young guys.
So much wisdom in there. And to your point on staying in shape, I always thought it was easier to stay in shape than get in shape. And I thought the exact same thing as you. I struggled with injuries early in my career, and our strength and conditioning approach during the season in Buffalo then was really easy. Hey, let's maintain. Let's, you know, try and keep some muscle on. Oh, you're sore today. And it's no offense to them. You know, that was their philosophy. And, you know, a lot of guys did well with that. Well, I got hurt in week 11 or 12, 4 years in a row. And I said, so I had to analyze, what am I doing differently during the season? And I was staying in shape, especially cardiovascularly, you're practicing. And then like you, I like to run as well because I want an edge. And when they get tired, I always said, if I'm tired, I know I'm in good shape for a 310 pounder. I know I'm in good shape. So if I'm tired, I know that defensive lineman's tired. And now I can put up a highlight reel block as opposed to when we're both fresh, there's going to be a lot of stalemates. And so that was always my mindset. But I switched my in-season approach to start lifting heavier as the season went on. And, you know, back squatting on Mondays. And you know what? Those injuries started to trail off. And I think a lot of it was I was keeping my legs through the season. I wasn't getting tired. And now people were falling on my legs. It was part of the schedule. But were my feet moving as fast as they were at the beginning of the season? Was I as strong? Was I moving people off the line of scrimmage as opposed to stalemating? So I had to analyze all that. I love what you said about the Pouncey brothers. I know both them personally. I played against them a bunch of times. But it's amazing the people that get to spend time in the locker room with those guys. I've talked to guys that have coached them. Their attitude on a day-to-day basis goes unnoticed because you don't see that behind the scenes. But, you know, people see the Pouncey brothers and say, man, those two are so gifted physically that you have twins that are two of the best centers in the NFL. Well, what you don't see is they both have the best attitude coming in the facility every day of the entire team. And I've heard that about them individually and separately from separate coaching staffs. So it's amazing.
That's great to hear. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's one thing people ask me, they say, so when did you know it was time to retire? And I'd actually announced my retirement before my 13th year. And I said, when I drive down 71, because I was up in Mason, driving down 71 to Spinney Field, and it felt like I was going to work instead of going down to practice and have fun. And that 13th year, I trained. I was probably in the best shape running-wise. I was probably down a little in weight. And I busted my tail because I was already, you know, 34, 35 years old. But I felt like I was going to work. And, you know, to your point, our in-season, you know, we would come in. I don't know what you're – but we'd come in Monday and watch tape. We would lift and we'd run. But then after everybody would do – we'd do like maybe 10 to 15 110s. I would do like – everybody would – I'd do like 2 to 3 miles. And then Tuesday was our day off. And I'd come in and run again, but bust my legs on Tuesday. And then we would practice Wednesday, Thursday, knowing that Friday was a short day and we had, you know, half a day Friday and all day Saturday, I would bust my legs again on Friday. So that would give me a full day and a half to recover for game. And that was my routine the whole season. And you're right. I mean, you know, my whole philosophy with my running in the offseason, I was a distance runner. I'd from like January to April, I'd run 6 miles every day. And then once we got ready close to minicamp, I would keep doing some distance, but then I'd do my interval training, gassers and 40s. But then my whole philosophy was if we needed to drive 80 yards in the fourth quarter, then my reserve tank was going to be a lot more full than the guy across from me. So I had that same attitude you had. But that's what I did all 13 years. And, you know, I felt in great shape. You know, injuries were a minimum for me 13 years. I think I missed two games my first 11 years, and then, you know, my last year shoulder kind of got me a little bit. But that's kind of the advice I'd give to the young guys.
That's phenomenal discipline, and that's a tremendous amount of work that you put into your body each year. But that's what gets you to a Hall of Fame level. That's what separates you and gets you that next edge. And there'd be a lot of people listening to this podcast saying, man, that's crazy, Anthony. You don't have to run 6 miles. And you know what? Maybe you didn't. But it gave you that mental edge knowing, well, I did more than you. I earned this. Yeah. And so you can't take it away from me. And it means more to me. And that's phenomenal. I love to hear it. You put all that work in 13 years. How's your body feel now? And what'd you do to peel the weight off when you're done playing?
Well, you know, it's interesting. So I retired and I was 35 when I retired. And like I said, I was in the offseason 4 to 6 miles a day. So I continued to run when I retired. The funny thing about it, Eric, I did all my running at Sycamore High School. So we're up north. So I'm retired and I'd set my watch and I'd start with my 6 miles. About a week into my retirement, I said, why am I timing myself? I don't have any tests or anything. So for 15 years after I retired, I ran 6 miles a day, every day. It didn't matter if we run on the road, I'd find a place. But then, you know, I got to a point where I said, you know, so I started playing some basketball, you know, some Sunday night leagues. And I said, you know what? It's either play basketball or, you know, you wake up the next day, your knee's a little sore. So I stopped playing basketball because I wanted to keep running. But then I got to about 50, 51. I said, I don't want to get to a point where I keep running and then I won't be able to do other things. So at about 50, 51, I stopped running. And I started doing all these other cardio and other exercises where I could still, you know, keep my heart rate up. And that's basically how I've done it. You know, my last 2 or 3 years, we had education about eating, but, you know, you still needed to be up there at 300 pounds, close to it. So when I retired, you know, that's when it started. Okay, I'm going to keep running. But now, you know, some of the things I used to splurge on now and then, you got to keep it really to a minimum. But that's what I did. And you know, really, even now, you know, I work out just about every day. I've always had a, you know, about a third of my basement is a weight room. So I have cardio, and now it's more body weight and dumbbell. So what I do, I basically 7 days a week, I do a minimum of an hour cardio, sometimes more. And then I do a lot of core and arm and dumbbell stuff. Just, you know, at my age, you need to keep doing that. Cause really the only thing now is I want to keep that flexibility to play golf. And that's one thing that I always had as a big guy, is always flexible. And I've been able to maintain that, because I'll stretch whenever I'm sitting around, before working out, during work. I always try to stretch and keep that. So that, and my body feels pretty good. I mean, I'm not going to lie. Sometimes you can hear me coming down the hall. And the thing that really has gotten me, and it got me late in my career, my shoulders. You know, I've had the rotator cuff stuff. So even with the 3 knee operations in college, my knees aren't terrible. But, you know, so I think the stop running at 50 really has been good for me. So that's what I do, and that's how I've been able to, you know, really keep the weight off.
That's great. And I'm kind of on the same boat as running. It's I'm only 34 years old now, but I had 6 lower body surgeries when I was in the NFL, and I just get worried if I run too much, what is that going to take away from me later? And my passion is, I'd love to play golf, and a part of loving to play golf is I love to be outside and I love to compete. So golf is something you can do forever. So I've taken into golf, and I try – I always worked on flexibility throughout my career. Another thing to try and give me an edge. And then that, now I keep it, try and keep my flexibility for golf as well.
That's funny. Great. That's awesome.
Post playing. So one of the things I struggle with now, I had signed a contract extension before my final season in the NFL before the neck injury. So I didn't see it coming, but retirement crept up on me. And it, at first it was hard to figure out what I was going to do to fulfill myself. Post-career, where have you found the most fulfillment in your life?
So, you know, I did things during my playing career, not necessarily thinking after retirement, but I just want to do other things. You know, I went into real estate. We had a building company, did some sales. And then I think the thing that really helped me my last 7 years, I did radio, high school football and radio here locally. So I loved it. So when I retired, I had some options. You know, I had work with guys. My last couple of years, my line coach, Jim McNally, had let me take guys during practice and work with them. So I got that experience. So now I retire and I'm contemplating, do I go into coaching or do I go into broadcasting? And so I had options in both. We decided to stay in Cincinnati. I actually got the USC line job offered to me a week after I retired, but it meant moving our kids to Southern California, and, you know, we pretty much established things. So we decided to stay here. So I went into broadcasting, and, you know, Fox had just gotten the NFL, worked with them, worked with ESPN. So I really enjoyed that. I loved it, but it came to a point now. So the kids got to an age where they were going to go off to college. Our son was going to play college football, and our daughter was going to play college basketball. So I said, I can't miss that. I mean, if I'm broadcasting, I'm traveling, and I'm not. So I left broadcasting knowing that other things would happen. So about their sophomore year in college, I always wanted to start a foundation. So that, I started that 20 years ago. That's a passion of mine. And then I got involved in a couple of small companies. So, you know, you mentioned the competitiveness. I mean, being able to raise money for kids. And now with a couple of small companies, being able to outbid another company in the same area that we're, you know, bidding for some business. That's how I get. But, you know, it's just, to me, it was kind of just checking it out. The broadcasting is one thing I knew that I wanted to do. But while I was broadcasting, that gave me a chance to check other things, because I knew eventually my kids were going to go off to college. So that gave me a good 7 years to do that. But, yeah, I tell people, it doesn't matter if you play 1 year or 13 years. You've been doing this for a lot of years. And it's not like, you know, you're training, you're playing, and then you're going, putting a suit on and going to work during the season or the off season, unless you want to do something. So it's tough, because we've been doing that forever. And you know, some guys know what they're passionate in, others got to check it out. So, it was, for me, it was not easy, but it was easier because I had 2 or 3 options.
Good deal. And that's phenomenal advice. And where I can tell you had a healthy place, and finding some things while you're playing, but still getting your workouts in and still devoting your craft. I always tell people, be very careful spending too much time doing something else other than football in the off season, or else you're going to start doing that a lot faster than you would. But
football was a way that I provided and put food on the table. I didn't want to mess with that. I wanted to play a long time. Yeah, you're right. It's a good point.
Absolutely. And you mentioned your son, Michael, your daughter, Michelle, both end up being Division I athletes. What advice would you give to a young dad like myself that has a 5-year-old girl and a 2-year-old boy? And I say this, I coach 5 and under soccer right now for my little girl. And I find myself, it's like, where is my sweet spot in pushing them? Because I know what I like to be coached. I like to be pushed. I like to get golf lessons because I don't like to practice bad habits. But it's like, I need to turn my dad cap on, my coach hat off. Where did you find your sweet spot in dealing with your kids in athletics?
No, so what we did right away, and we could see right away that both Michael and Michelle had some athletic talent. I think they're probably 5, 6, 7 years old. We sat them down, and it's still going to be tough because I'll tell you right now, the son of that gig is one of the toughest gigs in the world, especially playing the same sport as your dad. And I saw it personally because my college roommate, we were both offensive linemen. His dad played 14 years for the Chiefs. He was around the game. And then my buddy ended up being a 4-year starter. First true freshman to start at USC since World War II. 4-year starter at offensive guard, Lombardi Trophy winner, and a number one pick for the Chiefs, but was never good enough because he was always known as son of. So we sat him down and said, don't believe just because dad played in the NFL for all that you have to play sports. But we said, if you play sports, you're going to take the same approach as you do in the classroom and with your relationships, you're never going to give up and you're going to give it 100%. So if you decide to get into sports, it's a commitment. So I think once we did that and kind of, I think it helped some, even though it's still tough being the son and daughter of.
What age is that?
They're probably about 5 or 7, 8 years old at a very young age when they started. And then it was like, you know, especially with Michael, Michelle basketball, a little different because even though I played basketball, I really couldn't help her out. She was beyond my, you know, but with Michael, I just made it a point to be there to encourage. And if I would let him initiate, dad, let's go out and work on technique. Let's do this. Let's do that. So I wasn't, people thought I had him in the backyard every day as a kid working on pass set and run block, but I let him initiate it. And the one fun thing for me is that his senior year at Moeller, I'd coached the JV line while he was on the varsity. So I didn't coach him his sophomore and junior year. He was on the varsity. But his senior year, the offensive line coach left and he came home one day and said, dad, you got to coach the varsity line. I said, well, at that time I was with ESPN and they were letting me travel Saturday morning after his game. So I went to ESPN. They let me out of my contract. So I was his coach his senior year. And the same thing, as a senior in high school, I said, Michael, you're going to have to remove the dad and put the coach in. And I had to do the same thing. And my whole thing was treating every one of them equal. I wasn't pushing him because he was my son. I was just coaching him and really being demanding on all of them. But I think early on in their lives, I let them know that don't feel that you have to do this or play sports because dad was in sports. But if you do it, you're going to give it 100% and you're not going to quit.
I truly appreciate that advice. And you grew up and you talked about earlier that you grew up with your mom raising 5 kids. And I heard you speak one time before where you guys didn't even have a car.
Yeah.
Talk about your mom for a second. I know she meant a tremendous amount to you and her legacy lives on through you. Just talk about her for a second because I want to give her due time on this podcast.
Well, I will. First of all, I have to mention, so 4 years ago, we lost mom. And so I was back home. I have a 55-year relationship with the coach. I met him at the age of 7 when I started playing baseball. He was the head of Parks and Recreation. And then he was my varsity baseball coach that I played 3 years for him at my high school. And we have a great relationship. I give an award here in Cincinnati, the dinner of my foundation with his name. You know, so he actually, we had some similarity. He actually pitched on the 1961 USC National Championship team. So we have some connections. But so my siblings, they said, Anthony, you're going to do the eulogy at the, I said, I'm fine with it. So I got up there and Jim was in the audience, my high school baseball coach, a guy that I love and still have close contact with. I said, Jim, with all, and this is a little bit about what, who my mom was all about. I said, with all due respect, mom probably hit me ground balls and fly balls better than any coach I ever had. She was a heck of an athlete and a tough lady, you know, raising five, working 2-3 jobs. Like you said, and I mentioned, we never had a car. So she was one of 10. So we had a lot of support from relatives. We had to walk to the grocery store. We had to walk everywhere until we finally got enough money to buy a bicycle. And that's how we got around. But she was a tough lady. Her last probably, I don't know, 20, 30 years, she had rheumatoid arthritis, never complained, was tough as nails, man. She just got it done. One example is we would bring her out to stay with us. And we were living, and she had a bedroom, and she had a door that walked into the bathroom, and it was the off season. And I walk into her bedroom like at 7:15 in the morning, and she's laying on her, or sitting on her bed with an ice pack on her arm. I said, "Mom, what's going on?" Because I knew she was in constant pain with arthritis. And she said, "Well, I didn't want to wake you up." She had gotten up, Eric, about 4 in the morning to go to the restroom, and there was a magazine that was left on the floor, and she slipped and fell. And she said, "My arm's a little sore." And I'm like, "So you didn't wake me up?" She goes, "No, I just took a," because she had pain medicine for arthritis. She said, "I just took an extra pain pill." And I looked, I pulled the ice bag off, and you could tell her arm, it was not right. Wow. Took her right to the emergency. They casted her arm. She had broke her arm.
Wow.
And she laid there. She sat on her bed for about 3-4 hours until we got up and then told us. That's just how tough she was. Never complained. And so, yeah, she was a heck of a lady. And, you know, like I said, 4 years ago, I was at Super Bowl 50 up in San Francisco. The good thing, I was out on the West Coast, flew down, and we got to spend the last day with her. She was put on life support, and on Sunday night, Monday morning, we had to decide to take it off at 9 in the morning. But we were in there the whole day, and she passed 7:30 that night. But just a heck of a lady, man. She was tough. Wasn't real verbal, but we knew she loved us because she didn't miss any of our events. We knew she was at every sporting event because we could hear her in the audience. You know, don't mess with her kids, man, because she was Mama Bear. And yeah, so that was my mom, Esther, and she was a hard worker. And, you know, she taught us what work ethic was all about. She didn't have to sit us at the table and say, "Okay, kids, this is what work." We just watched her take off and walk to work. She would do 2-3 jobs. And then she taught us responsibility, because during the school year, if we wanted to play baseball after school, we had to do our homework. And in the summer, because she left so early, if we wanted to play baseball, and I was going to play 2-3 games of baseball a day, we had to do our chores, man. We learned how to wash dishes, wash clothes, iron clothes, clean the house. And we had to do that because she was gone all day. So she taught us work ethic and responsibility at a young age.
Man, I love hearing you talk about her. I've heard you on a couple different platforms mention your mom, and I wanted you to bring that up. When I was telling my wife last night, we had a date night, and I was telling her how excited I was about this morning and kind of talking about what I was going to bring up. I mentioned the deal about no car. So I'm glad you mentioned that you guys would walk to the grocery store, because that was the question my wife asked was, well, how'd they go to the grocery store?
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that. We were all excited to go to her to the grocery store. But then the fight started because one of us had to take the grocery cart back to the store, because we would carry the, you know, the cart. We'd roll the cart back home with the grocery, and nobody. So mom would designate every time. It was like, not me. Yep, you got to do it this time. You do it that. So we had to take the cart back to the grocery store. But you know, that's what we had to do. Yeah.
That's hilarious. I didn't even consider it. Switching gears a little bit. What are your thoughts on this 2020 Bengals team? Really tough. Yeah. Opener last week with the missed field goal, but 2020 Bengals, and then future with Joe Burrow running the show.
Well, first of all, I'm excited about Zach Taylor. Last year is his first year. I spent a lot of time around him. Very impressed with him as a person, as a coach. I've had a chance to talk to 2 or 3 people that know him extremely well, and nothing but great things about him. The offseason, I got excited because there's a lot of new faces on this football team. You look at free agency. I think there was a purpose, not only to get top players, but just about every guy they sign has playoff experience. Mm. You know, me, that's saying, okay, we're going to bring guys that are pretty good. We're going to sign them for big money, but they have playoff experience, and they've done pretty well on their respective team. So that's the first thing, playoff experience. Then you look at the draft. Every guy that they drafted, just about every guy that was a captain on their college team. I think there's one 3-time captain. They draft an offensive lineman from Kansas who decides to go to Kansas after being accepted to the Air Force Academy. I met a gentleman that knew T. Higgins' position coach really well and says T. Higgins is one of the finest young men. If he comes back for his senior year, he's probably going to be a captain. So now you got playoff experience. You got young men that not only were excellent players on their football team, but, you know, when you're voted as a captain by your teammates, that means that on the field, in the locker room, they respect you. So that's the thing that has excited me. I'm very, very much a big Joe Burrow fan. I watched him closely last year because I knew we had the number one pick. So Ed Orgeron, who I've known for 20 years, really close friend with him. I went down when he got the LSU job. He brought me down to speak at his coach's clinic. So we have a great relationship, speaks highly of him. But you read and listen to things about Joe Burrow, and then I watched him closely the entire season. Not only did he have a Heisman Trophy season, but just the bigger the game, the better he played. And the better he played with much better poise and calm. And, you know, you could tell by – you can watch a quarterback and know how smart he is by how he kind of reads and what he's doing during plays. And so I'm excited. I mean, I hated to see that they lost the way they did opening game, man. And I think they had 7 or 8 games last year that they lost, you know, what, by 5 or less, 4 or less points. So it was a rough year last year. So hopefully they learn from this first game, and it's a quick turnaround. You know, they got one of the rival games up in Cleveland, you know. So, you know, I'm excited about a lot of the new changes, but with the rookie quarterback, I mean, he's still a rookie. As talented as he might be, he's got some really good people around him. So hopefully they can get that offensive line going because, you know, you got Tyler Boyd and you got, you know, Ross and you got A.J. back and you got, you know, Mixon and, you know, Gio. He's got some good talents, you know, 3 solid tight ends. So we get that offensive line, I think we can get this offense going. I think the defense would be pretty good too.
Yeah, absolutely. And I grew up a huge Bengals fan, trust me. But you know that once you get in the NFL, it becomes more of a business. And I'm a current Buffalo Bills employee. But I always root for the Bengals. I love Marvin Lewis. Got that relationship with him. He won me over down at the Senior Bowl with the way he treated my mom and stepdad down there. You know, he didn't owe them anything and treated them phenomenal one night when they saw them out. And so I always loved Marvin Lewis, got to spend some Reds games with him. So it was easy to root for him. I root for the new regime. A buddy of mine, Colt Anderson's now the assistant special teams coach there. Right. And I want it for the city. You know, I want the Bengals to be good for the city. And
that's what when I talk to the guys and usually I'll talk to the team, I said, you know, you got 40, 50 guys that played with this team that are still big fans here. And we experienced 2 Super Bowls, and this city needs another playoff run. I said, we root for you guys because I want you guys as team members to experience that, staff, but I want this city because it's such a – so, yeah, we're still here. We're big fans. We root for them. So, yeah, that's good to hear about your buddy coaching, but I'm excited to see what happens here moving forward.
Yep, me too. All right, we're going to go through some recurring questions. And I'll be respectful of your time. But first, what's your favorite book?
It's got to be – I've read a lot of books, but it's got to be the Bible. I mean, that's – you know, as you know, when we were playing, we had a playbook, you know, for the season, a playbook for the week. This, to me, is a playbook for life.
Absolutely. Well, that's an easy transition to the next one. What role does your faith play in your life?
You know, it's everything. I mean, I mentioned to you earlier, my wife and I, Dee Dee, got married my sophomore year in college. In April of that year, then later that year, we both started our faith journey. So the exciting thing for me this past April, we celebrated 42 years of marriage. And next month, there'll be 42 years of our spiritual journey. So it's everything. I mean, it's something that, you know, we really attempt and usually it's pretty consistent to wake up every morning, pray together. We've been involved in church since we've been in Cincinnati. We try to, you know, meet with other, you know, couples, other individuals. So it's been something that's really gotten us through life. Even, you know, with the success in the NFL, I believe that my faith was everything. And, you know, to play with guys like-minded was great. And you get a chance to really, you know, share your faith. And not a lot of times it doesn't have to be verbal. I mean, I learned a lot of times it can be lifestyle evangelism, how you live your life. Because, you know, people are seeing you're talking this way, but how are you living your life? So, you know, they hear it a lot, but until you really live your life that way. So it's been everything for us for 42 years and will continue to be that way.
I love that assessment. It, you know, it's when you're teaching your kids, work ethic and your mom showing you. She didn't have to tell you. She showed you. And I think that's, as a Christian myself, I think that's the best way to approach people, because not everyone's good. Not everyone was raised the same way as you. Live in a certain way that someone says, man, what's different about Anthony Munoz? What's different about Eric Wood? I want what he has. But if you don't live with a certain joy about you, certain discipline, and, you know, carry yourself in a certain way, no one's going to say that. And then when you do try to approach them with the gospel, or you come to them when they're in a hard time and you say, hey, look, me and my wife are praying for you, then they kind of shudder away.
Yeah.
But if it all comes full circle, like, oh, he's now praying for me, now I get why he acts that way, talks that way, then I love that you brought that up.
Point, you know, you hear it a lot. You know, you're going to talk the talk, or you're going to talk the talk and walk the walk. You hear that a lot. And then, as it tells us in scriptures, you know, we're to be the salt of the earth. What is salt? Salt makes you thirsty. So we being the salt, we got to bring a thirst to people that they see something. I'm thirsty. I want what you have. It's just like when you're practicing, you get thirsty, you need water, you know? So you're right. We got to be that example. We have to be that salt for people where they thirst, and they should notice something different in our life and ask questions. Hey, you got something. What do you have that, you know, makes you different? So hopefully that is the way that we live our lives.
Absolutely. And if you're not living in a different way, if there's nothing attractive about the way you live, then you can't expect to be able to pour into someone's life. Great points. I'm glad we went there. What's your favorite restaurant? And then, are you a Gold Star or Skyline guy?
Okay. So first of all, now I've been in Cincinnati so long, any Jeff Ruby's restaurant is a favorite of mine.
Me too.
You know, birthdays, anniversaries, if we just want to go out and celebrate, it's going to be one of Jeff Ruby's restaurants. So that's my favorite. Am I a Gold Star or Skyline? Man, I don't want to get in trouble on this, but if I have to, it's going to be a Skyline. I have to.
I'm with you. I should have made sure you weren't contractually obligated to say something there. What's your favorite place to travel to?
Well, right now, I'd say probably the last if people said you got a week to 2 weeks and we're going to take care of it, it'd have to be Pebble Beach.
Oh, yeah.
You know what? There's just something about the air. That's probably, with all this going on with COVID-19, probably the saddest thing that has made me. 2 weeks ago, I finally got notice that it was canceled. I have a 3-day tournament, and we were going to spend extra days. So we're going to spend like 8 days at Pebble Beach, but it's been canceled. So right now, if I was 20 years ago, it would probably been Hawaii. But right now, it's Pebble Beach.
I know you grew up without a car. What was your first car that you owned?
My first car, I worked between my junior and senior year in high school. I was a ramp agent at the Ontario International Airport, loading and unloading planes. And I bought a Chevy, 1965 Chevy Malibu, for $500.
Nice.
So that was my first car, and it was known as the Blue Bomb.
That's awesome. Who's the most famous person in your phone? And let me take a guess real quick.
Okay.
Garth Brooks.
You know, it's funny. When I saw that question, I said, okay. I said, but yeah, Garth has got to be the most famous right now. Yeah. Garth.
Yeah, I know you have a special relationship with him. We would always see each other at the Teammates for Kids events. So I assumed that was the one. All right, last one, because you already mentioned your first job. Assuming that the airport job, was that your first job?
It wasn't. Actually, a couple years prior to that, I was an usher as a 16-year-old sophomore in high school. I was an usher at the Granada Theater. It was a small theater in Ontario, California, and I got hired as an usher there. So that was kind of my first official job, other than, you know, mowing yards and stuff. I was had to get dressed up and show up to work. Yep.
Good deal. What's your favorite movie?
Wow. I'm going to have to give you two, because they're kind of at the end of each. I'm going to have to say Sandlot and I just forgot. It's the Robbins, Morgan Freeman, Shawshank Redemption.
We get a lot of Shawshank Redemption on here.
Yeah, those are probably two of my favorites. They're right there. Of course, like I said, they're so different, but Shawshank and Sandlot.
Well, one last bonus question. Does the crooked finger hurt?
What's crooked finger? You're gonna do that. It doesn't hurt at all. It just looks pretty ugly. I don't need another surgery with rehab and pins stuck in it. So as long as I can still grab the club, I can still make a fist. I can still grab dumbbells and the golf club, so I'm not going to mess with it. Plus, it makes for great conversation piece. I mean, interviews, we don't finish it without a question about the pinky. So, no, it doesn't hurt at all.
Good deal. Well, I can't thank you enough for your time, Anthony. Your words will be incredibly impactful for so many people. Thank you for what you've done for the city of Cincinnati, staying there, pouring into the community, the influence you had on so many young people in the community like myself looking up to you. Thank you so much for your words and your time today.
Well, Eric, I appreciate it. We'll continue to do it. And thank you. It's been great getting caught up. And I know I've seen you at different events, but it's great having a chance to sit and chat with you. And I got to say, if you have come back to Cincinnati to visit and you have 3 or 4 hours, make sure to call me. We'll go up and play some golf at TPC.
Hey, I'm in 100%. I'll take you on that.
You got my number. You have my number.
Absolutely. Thanks, Anthony.
All right, Eric. Thank you.
BrainMD is Dr. Amon's supplement line, who is a former podcast guest of mine. Dr. Amon is regarded as one of the top, if not the top, brain experts in the entire world, and I've been taking his supplements for a little over a year now and have never felt better. I wish I had these while I was playing. I recommend the Eric Wood Bundle to all current and former contact sport athletes at any level, as well as anyone out there looking to support their brain and increase brain function. The supplements I take daily are Brain and Body Power Max, Neuro-C, Vitamin D3, and Brain Curcumins. For more info on each of these supplements, check out my post on Instagram and I explain them all. My handle is ewood70. Go to brainmd.com and use code ERICWOOD, one word, to get 5% off your order. Thank you for listening to What's Next with Eric Wood. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, please rate it 5 stars and subscribe. That goes a long way for us with this podcast. Tune in a couple weeks for another new episode.